Well, for those of you who are listening now, I hate to say it, but I forgot to turn this recorder on, and you just missed the first, 10 minutes, is it, or something? Yep. So, anyway, you missed the introduction saying, well, we're actually going to repeat some of these issues in the vision statement we have here on this sheet. This is on my website, and because of the holidays, we left the day after the Day of Atonement to come here. The party I was with, we were touring in a little caravan, taking 3 days, and I didn't have time to do everything because I have a part in the services back home. So I forgot to make copies of this. But anyway, this is something I have on my website, messianicliturgy.com. You don't even have to remember that. If you just Google Jeremiah Greenberg, you'll come up with all sorts of things. And Messianic Liturgical Resources, the ministry sort of is easy to Google because it's Messianic Liturgical Resources, so it pops up easy. But anyway, I have these principles there. You can always print a copy off of there if you want. Principles that make liturgy worshipful. How do you make it different from people thinking, oh, boring? Now, my real purpose in what I do every day is I have a unique opportunity here in that for a whole week I get to do a little bit each day. Some days I don't have as much time as others. Today it's only 15 minutes. Yesterday it was 22 minutes. So, I mean, it's down to the minutes the way these things work around here. And I also have the lulav waving and the dance in my time also. But the point is, what I'm trying to do is demonstrate to people how you can make liturgy worshipful. Give them a vision for it. And I believe that's one of the things I'm supposed to do when I have an opportunity like this. Actually, it's very unusual to have an opportunity where you can do something every single day, even if it's for 7 days, even if it's just a little bit. Because then, showing how I vary it, I only do a few prayers, but I do different ones each day. There is some... Well, there are different sections. I always try to do something like one of the blessings or something before the Shema, and I like to do the blessing of Messiah or the one which blesses the Father. It's called the Baruch Hu, and then we like to do the Shema, at least part of it, because it's pretty central traditionally. And then from the Amidah standing prayer from Temple times, I like to do part of that, and I have about 3 things that I do parts of, but here I'm only doing 2 parts. So I'm going to do the other part today that I haven't done too much. And then since it's a feast day, we have a part of the Hallel Psalms from Psalm 113 to 118. And today that part will be Hodu Lanai, which a lot of people know that particular song. So I'm trying to do things that are familiar whenever possible on the one hand, but I'm trying to give people a vision that this is not rocket science what I do. Plus I have the materials. I mean, I don't say that I have anything when I'm up there, but I do have things that will really make it easy for people who want to do liturgy. This Messianic prayer book here for Shabbat, everything in it has Hebrew, English, and transliteration, and the entire volume is also chanted on 2 CDs, the Hebrew parts, in sequence by page number, by track. We're going to go into it in a minute or two, as soon as we go through this sheet first. But the fact is, there are tools here that you can use. And in case you think I'm smart and did this, I have to tell you, the Father had me do it. He showed me what to do. On my own, I can't do very much. But when I listen good, I can sometimes do a lot. And it's the same way up there. If I'm mad at somebody or upset, I fall flat on my face, let me tell you. But when I'm in a good spirit and I'm nobody I can think of who I have to go apologize to for anything, and I haven't committed any gross sin or anything lately, sometimes just the power of God just comes, and I have a ball up there. I don't know if you know, a couple of days ago, I was just literally really high up there. I mean, I don't know if you can tell. Some people wouldn't call it that. They'd say, well, you seem really happy up there and excited or something. But I would call it the anointing. That's what it is to me. You know, as a former pot smoker, I used to get high. I know what that is. And I could say sometimes I feel pretty high up there when, God is able to move through me. and I'm able to just interact with people and things. And, you know, I want people to see that this can be something that's nice and enjoyable. And, you know, worship should be, and the Hebrew worship can be too. You know, and I'm thankful that Tim has let me do this. The first year I came here 3 years ago, I don't remember how much he let me do. It was just a little, because they were checking me out. The previous year they had a Jewish guy here. I guess I'm like the resident Jew that comes here or something. But that guy came, and he was critical of everybody and everything they were doing. So when I came the next year with John Merritt, this friend of mine who's been coming for years, he's a neighbor of mine in Tampa, and he and I are good friends, and I actually work part-time for him, helping him promote his book, and I'm a writer, so I do some things for him. But he brought me here, and they were a little leery at first. You know, was I going to be like the guy from the previous year who was came sort of as a know-it-all and critical? But, you know, Tim, he saw where I came from and, you know, the way I do things. And the last 2 years, I've had a little role every day. And I'm in awe because there's not a whole lot of people that get to do something every day, even if it's just, you know, a small thing. I mean, I think, wow, you know, I mean, really. But I really enjoy coming here because I learn from other people. Last night I had other people helping me with the Havdalah service at the end of Shabbat, because I learn from those people. You know, as a family, I can do the Hebrew and I have it in there, that's fine. But when you can add Jesus songs, Yeshua songs, if I say Jesus, I do it on purpose, I'll be honest with you, because I don't want people to think that I'm totally prejudiced against somebody else, you know, who... besides, when I came to the Lord, it was Jesus. Now, at home, when everybody knows me, I'll say Yeshua 99% of the time. Only once in a while will I throw in Jesus. Once in a while. Because, I don't know, some people say it's not good and all that, but, I mean, it was the name that... I only answered prayers in that name, or nobody would have gotten saved in the generation I was in. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into that, but don't be too hard on me if I don't say Yeshua all the time. So we have these principles here. Oh, that was on tape, too. Boy, okay, yeah. Yeah, hi, Tim. What's going on? Yeah. Yeah, right, okay. So I have these principles on the website, and I say the Messianic Cantor. Really, I like to say worship leader anyway. The worship leader of traditional style New Covenant Hebrew liturgy should have as a goal to lead the congregation into the presence of God through worship. And there's this Judaic concept of the cantor is a shaliach tzibur, one who's sending up prayers right at the congregation. But today, you know, in a regular congregation, the cantor is supposed to be an opera star. Well, I can listen in for hours, and that attracts people to come. I believe a messianic cantor, if you want to call him, leading the liturgy, should be more of a worship leader. And I give a lot of people a hard time who call me up because they have this vision. They want to be a messianic cantor, and they say, I have a beautiful voice, and, you know, I've listened to the CDs of this traditional Jewish cantor, and I'll say, you know, I'll tell you, I personally think if someone has just a pleasing voice, but they're really sold out to the Lord, I think they can really do a good job. You know, because to me, he should be more like a worship leader in trying to lead other people into worship, which is why I've sort of changed one thing. I encourage people to sing along with me everything. You know, not just in a traditional synagogue, the cantor only does some of it, and the people, he does everything, but the people don't join in. But to me, worship is participatory. Everybody sings a worship song, you know, English regular worship, but why shouldn't everybody sing the liturgy then? That's the way I feel. I may be a minority, but I think it's a good thing, and I'm going to try to share it that way, so I think everybody should sing along with me. So I purposely avoid what I call cantorial squiggles, where somebody is, you know, but you don't know it's coming, so it stops you. Now, I know a really worshipful guy. I'm not going to say who it is. I mean, he is known as a psalmist of Israel, and he's sort of messianic. He goes to a lot of churches. He's a wonderful guy, very humble. But every time he does liturgy at this one other conference I go to, I'm not going to say where, he always adds these things, and it stops people from singing along. And he said he learned this from my books and CDs. He learned the tunes, but he still adds his own little thing that he's used to doing, and it makes it so you can't sing along. So I would say anybody who's involved in this, I believe it's better to keep the tune simple so everybody can learn them and sing along with you. Because people love to sing along. They really do. Once they learn it, they just go for it. I mean, they really do. So I have that in the first paragraph. Then, whatever Hebrew is used in the liturgy, the second paragraph, whatever prayers are taken from the traditional Siddur should be Messiah-oriented, or at least God the Father-oriented. Sometimes they used to sing songs that were like Zionistic labor songs from Israel. And I said, where is this coming from? You know, it should be worshipful. I mean, that seems like a no-brainer, anyway, to me. Next, in order to make liturgy more meaningful as worship, the origin and significance of the prayer should be given. That's what I said when we start. I like to exhort and encourage, you know, as I introduce things so people can own it. They can see something, and then when they do it, they can think, wow, this is, you know, 3,500 years old, this is pointing to Yeshua, other people are singing this in synagogues, they don't even know who they're praying to. You know, that sort of thing, to me, makes it much more meaningful. And this is all the stuff that I do here. I'm trying to give people a vision for all these things, and it's not that hard. I try to keep it simple. I mean, I know it's not for somebody who's never seen it before, or trying to read the transliteration. I try to go slow, but I forget. But it's hard to learn the syllables, to read them that fast, because it's something new, and I forget sometimes, but I do try to go slow. But I want people to see this as something, wow, we could do this, you know. It wouldn't be rocket science if we tried to do it. We actually could carry it off. Because a lot of people have learned to do it from the main, that Shabbat Siddur and the CDs. There's some people, I've gotten at least, I don't know how many calls, but over the years, many people have called and said, you know, we got one guy in our congregation, he took the CDs in his truck, and he goes 50 miles to work every day, and he just played them going back and forth to work, and he learned them all, and now he's our cantor, you know. They use a term, I don't mind if they use it, but that's fine. But, I mean, what they're saying is, you know, there's always somebody who's motivated to learn the items, and if they know the CDs are available, heck, this is just a book. Nobody wants to read something in here, you know. What does reading something do? I mean, it's not liturgy if it's reading. I can say, oh, it's nice, it's Hebrew prayers, but we're trying to do something that is meaningful, significant, and, you know, this is meant to be sung and chanted, so it's a question of figuring out how to do it. Everything I have is Hebrew, English, and transliteration. It's very phonetic, my transliteration. I don't know if you noticed it, but it shouldn't take anybody very long to be able to pick it up. Because now, not all transliterations are, because there's no one kind of transliteration. And there are some that are scholarly. Depending on how they transliterate it, you'll know whether there are two sounds, like a samach and a sin, you'll know which letter it is. But who cares if you're trying to sing? I mean, what do you care if they use one letter to let you know it's one letter of the alphabet and something else? I don't know if I can explain this. But anyway, yeah. I want people to be able to... Yeah, all right. Significance of prayers. The next thing says, translation and transliteration should always be provided. I really believe that. There are many, many congregations. So few people really have the vision for this in some circles. They just, I don't know. There are always going to be people who are new, who don't know what the things mean. So you need the translation. And you need transliteration because you're always going to have most of the people who can't read Hebrew. Always. I mean, we're a New Covenant congregation. I mean, whether it's Jews and non-Jews from background, so to speak. You know, very few people know Hebrew. I mean, the kind of Jewish education I got is usually around 3-4% only get that kind of Hebrew day school background, Hebrew basic education, go to school, something like that. Very few. And so most people, even from a Jewish background, don't know much Hebrew, because it's not really emphasized. You're supposed to do the prayers when you're bar mitzvah 13 or something in Hebrew, but most of them don't even understand. They're not taught what it means. Not everywhere, but a lot of places. So I always think you should have always have transliteration for the Hebrew, so people can sing along. Nobody has to know whether you're doing it from the Hebrew or translation. That's nobody's business. You're worshiping. You know what you're worshiping because you have the translation. I mean, at least you should have it, according to my way of thinking. And I like to do the English first. And this is, again, everything I keep doing here. Everything I'm telling you is exactly what I'm trying to do here, and hopefully I'm doing just what I'm saying here. I'm practicing what I preach, so to speak, because I really believe that this is a way to do it. I'm not saying people should do the liturgy. I think that it would enhance the quality of their services if they even just did a little, even if it's just one or two items. But I'm not trying to tell people they should do it. What I'm trying to do is demonstrate, if you're going to do it, how to do it. Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, it's the same way. I have a little book on the new moon, and celebrating the new moon, because God was, he was sort of leading me in that direction for years that we should celebrate it. So I collected materials, we're doing it, put things together. I have this book on all this stuff, how to do this, what we should do. But what I don't tell you is when to celebrate it. Because I'm not going to get into an argument, you know, on that. I want to show people how to do it. But in the same way here with the liturgy. But I'm not going to say you should do it. I don't like it when somebody says you should do something. That always gets me. Because should, if you're not ready to do that, whatever that should thing is, you're not ready. And if you're really honest, you know that there are always things that God brings us gradually to. You know, you don't stop. I mean, I ate ham sandwiches for a long time, even while I was still messianic, because God didn't convict me yet. I mean, this is years ago. I mean, and it wasn't an issue of Torah observance at that point. It was just a question of being messianic. I mean, God had to work on me because even though I came from the background I did, I had left it all behind.
You had to make a full circle.
Yeah, I'd left and I'd gone the way of the world. You know, and when I was first born again, I used to tell people, they used to say to me, how does it feel to be a completed Jew? And I used to always say, well, to tell you the truth, I just consider myself a Christian. So they scratch their heads a little bit and walk away. They didn't know what to make of me, you know. But that's the way I felt. You know, I'd left it behind. And then, you know, after a bunch of years, God brought me full circle to the Messianic movement. I went to a Messianic conference and I argued with them about the Messianic movement. But God gave me there the Messianic vision, which to me meant two things. One, it makes sense that at least some Jewish people, when they become believers, would want to worship in a Hebraic style, because, you know, like the Presbyterians came from Scotland, and the Lutherans from Germany. There are all these cultural things. So why shouldn't people from a Jewish background, you know, worship with Hebrew and the feast? The other thing was that it was a really powerful testimony to all my family that I didn't become just a Christian now as a Messianic Jew. And it wasn't just semantics with them. Well, now I believe more in being a Messianic believer. I don't really like the term Messianic Jew at all, because I believe we're New Covenant, and I really believe that everyone is, there's only really one faith for everyone. I believe that, and I believe in total equality, so I don't like labels like that. But I really can get off in tangents, in case you haven't noticed, too. So I forgot even where I was there. But yeah, okay. So anyway, you should always, I believe in always providing those. No one has to know whether you're reading from one or the other. It's nobody's business. And I think you should always have translation. Now, if you should know what you're saying in a foreign language, it's just that simple. I don't like saying something in a foreign language. I mean, especially if it's supposed to be worship. You know, I don't exactly trust everybody, too. I mentioned that earlier, you know. So anyway, on the back page also, liturgy to be meaningful as worship should be sung and chanted whenever possible in simple, easy to carry tunes and chants by the whole congregation. There's a couple things there. By the whole congregation, not just the person who's leading it, but also and the tunes should be easy to sing, not with, like I said, the cantorial squiggles, you know, little right. things that stop you. You know, it's like that one person, I mean, they're a friend of mine and everything, they're well known, and they said they learned it from me, but the way they do it is their style of singing, and they're well known, but they add these little things into it, and it really stops you from being able to sing along. And I don't like hearing somebody else, I like to sing along. And I have never seen, I've never been to a place where people didn't want to sing along with me. And if they knew it, all the more so, they're just hungry for an opportunity to sing along because a lot of places just don't give them the opportunity. It's that same principle, you know, that they don't have the opportunity. In a lot of Bible studies, you know, we have a Bible study, a parsha study, the portion of the week, every week. We let people speak in it a lot. And people are so hungry for that because most churches and everywhere else you come from, they didn't let you do that, you know. So people love to be able to participate. The problem there is for people to know when to quit. If they wound up a particular day, I'm sure you all know that too. So those are principles. So okay, that then this is all on the website, messianicliturgy.com. I said all you have to really know is my name, and you can find all this stuff. So now we have a book. I want to show you this book. And if you open it up from the Hebrew side, because Hebrew siddurs, which mean for prayer books, start from it. Now this is just for Shabbat. A regular Jewish siddur would probably have daily prayers and holiday prayers and the Shabbat prayers. I sort of limited this to the Shabbat prayers, although most, not all, but most of these prayers are also said during daily prayers. But I didn't put together a daily prayer book, and people keep asking me for it, and I don't want to do it because I don't want people praying a whole book. I mean, if they really know that much to know that there's the Orthodox do all these different prayers, let them get the art scroll anyway. What do they need mine for? Because those books don't point to where Yeshua is in it. You know. Now, there was a time I might have felt a little different, but still, I just don't want to give people something and then they can just pray. I did mention there's one congregation that did the whole book, the Shabbat portion, every week. And I was bored stiff. I even say in here, it's better to just do a few things. You know, do them with Kavanah, with heart intent, really worshipful, than it is to do, you know, a whole bunch of things. Now, yesterday I did do a little Torah service part thing, and we do and do that, and that's a little longer. But basically in our home congregation, and yeah, I wanted to show people... Right. I wanted to show people that was part of it too. Now yesterday was a day I had 22 minutes total. But again, I have to include the lulav waving and the dance comes out of my time. I have a deal with them. If the guy doing the music takes a long time on the dance, I can still do what I have time anyway. So that's good. Because sometimes they want to, you know, the worship, you want to keep worshiping when you're worship leading, you know. So anyway, I had to figure out, I wanted to do each of the categories that I just mentioned briefly, sort of before the Shema, there's like a couple things I'm not going through this yet, but I've done three things here. One of them is the Matovu, which is sort of an introductory prayer, which is the prayer of Bilam over the children of Israel. That was on page, let's go to the morning service, on page 39 and 40. I'll give two pages, I'll give the Hebrew and the English page. Even if nobody here reads Hebrew, I will still do that too. I want to just show people there isn't just the English side, there's the Hebrew side with it. So I'll pretty much always say, you know, page 39 and 40. So the Matovu is the second thing on that page, and it's a collection of verses actually, but the first one is the verse that the prophet Bilam said, you know, when he was asked to curse Israel, paid to do it, and he, what could he do? But, you know. So, anyway, this is sort of an introductory prayer. And the other things that I've been doing on page 43 and 44 is the Baruch Hu. Now, I haven't done this for a couple of days. I did it one day. And it's not going to get done today either, but it probably will be tomorrow. Because when I don't have a lot of time, today I only have 15 minutes before you take off the other. It's more like 12 minutes, 11 minutes. I don't do both of them. I keep wanting to do both, but I have to really keep moving. I don't want to go too fast. It's not worth, but still, you know, I'm trying to find the balance. So I haven't done the Baruch Hu, which is blessing the Father, actually. Very common. And I like to explain that we, in our tradition, have a form of prayer called the brachot, or blessing, where we bless God for the bread, we bless God, and here's a blessing, just blessing him for who he is, you know. But then we like to also add, if you turn another page, on the bottom of page 45, 46, the blessing of Messiah. Again, this is another one that has the word Baruch or Baruch Hu, all the same root, but this has the blessing format. The blessing format is what I call something that has Baruch Atanai Eloheinu Melech Olam, blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the Universe, who gives us bread, gives us whatever, and it's just said in Fiddler of the Roof, keep the Tsar far away from us, and you know. But we actually put together this blessing of Messiah because we figured, you know, let's have a blessing thanking God for giving us the way of salvation in Messiah Yeshua. Of course, this does not come from traditional Judaism. We made it up. I honestly can't remember if I did it or somebody else did it so long ago. I don't know. I might have touched it up or something. There is one prayer I know that I did, but besides that, I don't think I did. But I did change something in it to make it a little more to my liking. But anyway, so we have that blessing, and I do that. And then you have the Shema on the next page here. Now, in an Orthodox, page 47, 48, in an Orthodox service, you have a bunch of prayers after the Baruch Hu prayer, the one blessing the Father, a few pages before. I did not put every prayer in here because I don't want people, getting into myriads of, I want people to be able to pick and choose a few things. I think, it's perfectly fine. I may enjoy liturgy, but I don't think it has to be half the service, quarter the service. I just think, let's just make it a part, because I believe it should be part of our heritage. You know, it's part of, it gives us more, a little more identity with the Father, because it's Hebrew and it's worship. It's Hebrew worship as opposed to just English worship. I'm not saying there's anything at all wrong with it, but here we already have worship that people have been using that's based on the circles that we enjoy learning from. I mean, when I say that, I'm talking about Judaism in some sense, or whatever you want to call it. But, I mean, we are taking things, obviously, from it all along the way, so why not take some of the prayers, too, those that have good spiritual significance. If it doesn't have good spiritual significance, I'm not going to put it in here, or I'm not going to say it. I mean, let's make that clear. But not everything has to always point to Yeshua. But I'm surprised, you know, it can be just a good scriptural idea that is perfectly fits in with New Covenant teachings, too. So, for instance, the Shema, sometimes because I happen to believe in that there's some form of three in our... I like to say, hey, you know, it says Adonai Eloheinu Adonai, or Yahweh Eloheinu Yahweh. It has three in there, you know, but I wouldn't do that introduction here, because this is not the crowd for that, you know. I don't believe in making enemies unnecessarily. Which is one of the reasons I'm trying to go back and forth between Yahweh and just saying the way I learned it, Adonai and God. You know, now, I mean, I really felt that some people might have been turned off the first day, even though I believe there was what I call a real anointing on the service, in that part of the service when I was doing it. I mean, I believe God was really in it, and he was working through me well and everything. But I also felt that some people just couldn't get past the fact that I didn't use Yahweh. And I can understand that. So the last 2 days I used Yahweh pretty much, although it's obvious that, you know, it wasn't my natural, because of how many times I messed up. You know, yesterday was better, only twice. the first day. Well, it's partly because I'm reading it in the Hebrew, not in the transliteration. See, the Hebrew stays the same. It still has the same Hebrew spelling. And I was rereading it. When I'm reading it, I'm reading the Hebrew side. Although in the transliteration, I changed it to Yahweh. And here, you know, Baruch Atah Yahweh. So it's spelled out that way. But I wasn't reading that part. I was reading the Hebrew. And that's kind of why I messed up. So yesterday I was trying to read it in the transliteration, which is not natural for me. Knowing Hebrew, if you know it, you wouldn't, you know. Anyway, but so obviously people know that, you know. But today I'm going back to it for 2 days. I want a break. I want to be able to just worship with it. If I do it with Yahweh for me, I have to concentrate on it to remember it's coming up. Because it's not the way I normally do it, okay? I mean, I'm not trying. So.
No, I know exactly what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Because I memorized some verses with 509. Earlier
yeah.
years, and it's just there, you know.
Yeah.
You really have to.
I thought I saw in the middle of yesterday saying Adonai and then ending off with a way.
I know I have this off. I don't know what time it is now, but just keep an idea. 11:30 already.
What's your time?
I don't know. A quarter. Say 45 minutes already. But anyway, actually, you know, even though we haven't gone through, we're still covering some good ground here. Because I am showing you a little bit of sections here. Now, this is mostly in a morning service. Evening service has sort of the same things, but a few prayers change. The idea here, I guess what I'm going to tell you is, if you see, there are certain sections, let's say, before the Shema, and then a few things in between. In the book, there's two things. There's Micha Mocha in here, and also Hodu Ladonai. Not because it's part of the what I'm emphasizing as the Hallel Psalms that we do on holidays, but because it is a worship song that is similar to things in there. So I have it in there. And then we also, and that leads into to the Amidah. The Amidah, the standing prayer, there's different sections in here. And I'm mostly doing two parts of it. The first paragraph, the Avot portion, the faithfulness of the fathers, Avotus fathers. And this other one that I did the other day when the PowerPoint got all messed up. And I don't even know if anybody remembers what it was all about. But it has to do with the resurrection. It's called Gibor Adonai, the might of God. It says you are mighty to save and you resurrect the dead and you heal the sick and all these things. It's really new covenant. But because it got flubbed up, I don't know. Anyway, I'm doing that part today. So that's another section. So I want you to fix in your mind that, you know, if you're going to have something to do with this, you have that ability. You're welcome to use one of these. Just be careful with it. These are the books that I sell. So we want to keep them, you know, nice and clean and sort of so I can pretend that they've never been touched by anybody's hands before you buy them, you know. I mean, oh yes, you know, fresh out of the box, you know what I mean?
Actually, we have one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I always say I hope you have the CDs, not because I want to sell you a set, but I think the book is infinitely more valuable when you have the CDs. Here you have the words and everything. That's one level. But when you can listen to it, you can learn how to sing it. Singing is so much nicer than trying to read it. Besides, you never really know till you hear it if you're really pronouncing it right, especially if you're using transliteration, because you know it's not an exact thing that you can always figure. But also, I mean, it's just the whole dimension of worship because you're actually, you know, singing it or chanting with it. And also, you can practice your Hebrew with it too, because you can say, oh, this is a halftime. Here's the way it's written in the Hebrew. You might figure the letter. For the Machzor, 2 CD set, yeah. Everything I have pretty much has Hebrew in it, has a CD with the Hebrew chanted. So people, because otherwise, how are people going to learn it? You know, you can't learn it just from the transliteration. If you hear it, then you can follow the transliteration. But at the beginning, you know, you have to have the... what happens is after you listen to the tunes a little bit, you'll have them in your head. Because it's so much easier to remember, you know, as a song, you know what I mean, than it is, you know, You know, if you tried to memorize just words, that's 10 times harder than learning a song.
Hard,
you know.
So with this being a 2011 printing, is it any different from one that's older?
Pretty much not, because a printing means I can only afford to make so many at a time. So pretty much, I've had 15 printings or something, six, I don't know. Because pretty much, it's funny, it lasts approximately, I usually get about 1,000 books. A few times I've gotten a little more, but I can't afford to get more because it's a hardbound book. And I have to pay for it up front. With the other books, I have some books that are soft cover. Those I can get as few as 300. But with these, I have to do a minimum of 1,000. Or there's no cost breakdown. That's any good under 1,000. It's the first one, and it's like $5,000 or $6,000, which is a lot of money to get. To, and I don't usually manage to save it all from the proceeds. No, it doesn't work that way, you know. But I try, but you know, there's this principle of first needs first.
Yeah.
You know, if you got something in front of you, you take care of that. Trust the Lord for later what you need, and it's pretty much worth it. I am getting a little better now. At this stuff. Yeah. You have to put it away somewhere. Put it, literally put it in a sock or something. You can't leave it in the bank account. You know, I mean, you know, but, I mean, now that I told people this, I can't do it anymore, but I used to hide the money for this in the freezer in a little bag. and the reason was I would really forget it was there. But if I have, you know, $1,400 saved for the book, and I have it in my bank account, I'm seeing it. Even if it's in the savings part, I'm seeing it, you know. And, you know, something will come up, and, you know, I will think, all right, well, we'll get this thing first, you know. And, you know, I know how much trouble it is, you know, to get the money together for the hardbound books. You know, now that's why I did the Moxod book. It's 100 more pages than this. It used to be hardbound, but I couldn't afford it. That was like $7,000-$8,000, and you don't sell as many because that's only 3 days a year, where the Shabbat comes every week. So I made maybe some.
The Mentor has the 19.
In the Amidah. No, it doesn't.
Seven.
Well, I don't even have the full. I basically have the same number. I don't have a full almost anything here because I'm trying to show people that we have to pick. If you know enough to know that and know how to read the Hebrew, then go ahead and use the art scroll. I'm not going to duplicate it. I'm trying to give people who know, pretty much who are beginners and intermediates, you know, something that they can learn with absolutely no knowledge. I actually believe that the things that I have, anybody who has no knowledge of Hebrew can learn how to do liturgy from. This is Aida. She's a friend of mine, actually. She's from Japan, and she's here with us, too, for Sukkot. Yeah, we're just going through a few things. You can use one of these. These are the ones we buy. You get them dirty, you have to buy it. But otherwise, you know, we put them back in the box and we say, wow, brand new, fresh out of the box. And, yeah, almost fresh out of the box. But fresh for you out of the box. But anyway, yeah. So we have the Amidah parts after the Shema. And we can talk more personal things at the table. I'm there till 1 o'clock. So you have that section. So if you're involved in anything, you would pick, well, I'll show you the paragraphs. Page 53 and 54, you have, it says Amidah prayer, standing prayer. And one thing you'll see me do, every time I use a Hebrew word, you'll see me use the English. I cannot stand it when people throw out Hebrew stuff and don't say what it is. I mean, I don't care how many people do know. If there's one person there who doesn't know, I don't want to be the one making that person say, well, it's okay for them, but this is not for me because I don't understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way people think. You know, if you don't understand it, you might say, well, this is for them, but it's not for me. You know, especially young people, for instance, you know, they'll say, I don't know what they're talking about. And I don't want to do that disservice to anyone, you know. So you'll see me every time I'll say Amidah, I'll say the Amidah standing prayer, and then I'll say the Avot, Father, you know, in the Avot, the Father's portion. God promises to bring Redeemer. That's the first paragraph, and that's so messianic. Jewish people say it three times a day. Say, wow, they don't even know that they're talking about Yeshua here, you know. And then the second paragraph, they can keyboard and I, page 55, 56, this is the paragraph I'm going to do today. Now, we're not going to read or anything, but, and I'm not really, we're not going to have time to read them because it's already, you know, most of our time is gone. On the next page, though, 57, 58, you have the Kedusha prayer, which is really neat because it has some prophecies from Isaiah and other places where it talks about in heaven where the angels call back and forth, holy, holy, your name is blessed, and then it has some really neat ideas. So we like doing it, but it's more for the advanced folks, you know. Here I concentrate on the things that are not easiest necessarily, but I can use them to really, well, this is a little more fancy, let's say, or something, you know, a little more advanced. Not that that's the right word. Okay, and on 59, there is a form of, you know, everywhere you see, say the word Kiddush, Kadosh, or Kaddish, these are all forms of the same word. They're talking about different prayers, but they all come from the word Kadosh, holy, or sanctified. And this is some of the traditional Shabbat paragraphs here. And the holiness of the day, Eloheinu v'levateinu, this is a traditional paragraph. I like it. It has a beautiful little tune in the middle there, V'tahar libeinu, where it says, and purify our hearts to serve you in truth. It just has a nice tune. V'tahar libeinu, V'tahar libeinu. Anyway, it changes in here. Just like when I did the end of the Avot portion, I sang the worship tune at the end, where it says Melech Chozer Moshiach. If I wasn't doing that, I would just keep on with the tune of the actual chanting of the liturgy. I would have said Melech Chozer Moshiach Umagerim Baruch Ata. I don't know, but I like, if I know there's a song in it that someone's developed and people know it, I like to do the song. Because again, I like to worship, people love to sing. So I'm not going to deprive them of it just because I'm doing it in a cantorial style generally. I mean in a this liturgy style. But if there is a song, and that way you're also pointing out that there are songs that are coming from the liturgy too. So I want to blur the lines between worship, and liturgy worship.
Well, it also makes a bridge for them. It makes it easier for them to transition.
Right, because they can, exactly, yeah. So you have a few parts of the Amidah, but not the whole thing. Then you have the Kaddish prayer. Now the Kaddish prayer is used sometimes as a mourner's prayer, but it doesn't have to be, because the whole idea is Job used it to bless God after his children were taken away and everything else. So the idea is, hey, even when I have the worst sorrows, we're still supposed to praise God. This is nothing about people dying and you know, it has to do with worshiping God. God, you're so great, wonderful, and everything. And there's nothing to do with it. And it has a song at the end, too. The last one, Oseh Shalom, is Oseh Shalom Bimramav Yaseh Shalom. So we love to sing that. Now it takes more time. And if you have a leader who doesn't like, you know, taking time, you're in trouble. But, you know, I'd rather cut out something else and be able to do the things that people can sing, because then they enjoy that more, even more than just the regular liturgy. They like the regular liturgy, but they love it when there's a song in there. And I'm the same way. You know what I mean? I would rather do only half of it, not that I had. But I was told one day to shorten it. So instead of saying Yasser Shalom three times, I just did it once. Where, like, when I wanted to shorten it, I did something only one. Oh, the shaking of the lulav yesterday. I did it one day. I did it twice, or maybe 2 days. Did I? Oh, well, anyway, I only did it once yesterday. I'll probably only do it once today, too. I mean, not that it isn't nice to do it twice, but I want to get certain things done today, and we have that second paragraph of the Amidah, which people are going to stumble over. I got to go really slow in the Hebrew on the transliteration. There is that pesky fly around here. Oh, yeah, but the brother, one of those flies, I got him already back in the next door there. I got one anyway. I actually can catch flies. I can, do different things. I don't want to tell you, but I can catch them in my hand. I really shouldn't tell you. I can. Then you got to go wash your hand, okay? All right, I'll wash them afterwards. But you got to be quick, and there's an art form to it. You got to go up. You see, the fly doesn't go this way. He goes that way. That's the whole trick. And you got to be fast. You got to go like that. I mean, really? Some, though, are slower than others. Some are fast, too. But I don't know. You can cut that off the tape if you want. Okay. All right. So you have the Kaddish prayer. You know, this is the way I am. You know, I'm the same way when I'm up there. You know, although I try to keep it, you know. But I don't believe you have to be serious to be, you know. I mean, it says in these holidays you're supposed to rejoice before the Lord. Now, since I was a former hippie, I know all about rejoicing. We used to go to these music festivals, and we would get something, and then begins with an H, and then we would, you know. But you know, I used to think, why can't believers? When I became a believer, you think that's funny, huh? Why can't believers? Why shouldn't believers be able to? I mean, do we have to be dour faced? You know, it's like the old photographs. I always used to say people used to never smile in photographs. I mean, they look so terrible.
Hold it for 10 minutes.
I mean, but they look, you know, like, doesn't anybody smile? I mean, I like to rejoice before the Lord. I'm convinced that, you know, I'm convinced that God has a sense of humor. I really am, because the different things He's done in my life, you know, and other people's lives. I mean, to me, anyway, the Kaddish prayer is a nice prayer. It's usually used for mourners' day. A lot of people stick it in somewhere. And then you have the Torah service part, which is only if somebody knows how to do it. It's a little tough to do, but a lot of people have a processional. One of the things I made sure I did yesterday, even though it took a couple of minutes to do, and I didn't really want to take the time, is explain why we do it, that it's not making an idol out of it. Because you got to deal with all these issues. You know, that never occurred to me until somebody else said we have to do it, and I joined this one congregation, and they always did it. I had never thought of it, but then it makes sense. There are going to be people, you know, they're going to look at it, and they're going to think, they're making an idol of this thing. They're walking the thing around, you know, and they're kissing it, you know, and everything. Oh, I didn't say that yesterday, but of course we didn't do it. But on Thursday, when we celebrate the Simchat Torah, rejoicing in the Lord, we will have it. And then I'll also add one more thing, and that is that, you know, sometimes we touch the Torah and bring it to our lips, and one of the things that reminds us of is that we bring the sweetness of the Word of God to our lips. You know, now, that is something that's contrived. There's no real reason for that any more than you can have all these reasons. Just like I said last night in the Havdalah service, that to me the braided candle is like the believers have a little flame alone, but when they get together they have a much bigger flame. And as Yeshua said, let your light shine before men. So the bigger the flame, you know, we're in unity. But those are all things that, you know, they're not, there's no place where it says that, you know. I mean, you just one of the nice things about all this symbolism and all these things is it's really not that hard to find good spiritual significance in it, messianic significance. It's really not that hard at all, you know. So anyway, you have the Torah service here, and there are parts of it. On page 65 and 66, you have the Torah blessings. And we always do the blessings before and after the Torah reading. We always do the English for the Torah reading. We usually only do a couple of verses. This is something you won't have at the beginning. Getting a Torah scroll is something that's, it's a big deal. Some people want to invest in it. But if you have a congregation, people will really contribute toward it. It usually takes $3,000 or so at least to get something that's passable. I know people who have Torah scrolls. They come out in New York through a source that's traditionally Jewish, very Orthodox. But you know, he's got 12 kids or something, and he needs money. So, well, even if they're Messianic, he'll take their money. I mean, you know, he's got to feed his kids, you know. I mean, you know, so he bends the rules a little bit, you know, because he doesn't really want to sell to them. But, you know, got to earn a living. Anyway, so we have, like, on page 67 and 68, something we did yesterday. People love this in a Torah service, to have the Zohar Torah, raise the Torah, and sing this one little chant. It's a one-liner, but it's really nice. now, and then there's more stuff, the Haftar, which is a prophetic thing, and then there's a hymn, eight, if you have an ark, on page 73 and 74, this is a beautiful little hymn, has a great tune, and then you have the Kaddish again in a different place that you can do it if you want, and then you have some hymns on 77, 78, 79, 80 is the Elena, which is not a hymn. It's more like a prayer thrown in with the hymns. And then he got two more hymns in there. The 81, 82, Adon Olam, which has 100 different ways of singing it. Well, maybe not quite, but close to it. And then you have a Kiddush prayer on there. Kiddush is not just Borei Pri HaGafen. It's actually a sanctification prayer for the day. But most people only know, like on page 83, 84, where it says Borei Pri HaGafen at the very bottom. They think that's what Kiddush means, meaning sanctification, again, for that word Kodesh. But it's really about that remembering the greatness of God. Actually, much of the prayer centered around the fact that God wants to remember His greatness in destroying the Egyptians. That is really the central historical theme of Judaism and of our Hebrew roots. It's not anything else. It's not the temple, actually, until you think about Yeshua. The whole thing is how great and powerful the Exodus from Egypt was. And I mean, God literally, it was a literal battle of the gods. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob going against the gods of Egypt and the different, I mean, it was, and God literally destroyed them with the 10 plagues. We think of them, they were plagues, but these were things that affected people just like a tsunami or something else. But I mean, really, in a really big way, it was like a kind of real destruction that the whole world knew about, the whole known world really knew about that, because it was such a big deal. But anyways, the sanctification prayers actually go back to that over and over again for the holidays, for Shabbat. And then you have the Havdalah service, which we did last night, which is on 70, 87, 88, and 89 and 90, because that's the end of Shabbat. And this is what I used. And then, of course, the family added their part. Now, the rest of this book is basically some of its... It has additional worship, which are Israeli worship songs, and then it has responsive readings, which are really nice for people who want to add responsive readings. I do have one in the liturgy, and that's right after the Baruch Hu, before the Shema for Shabbat. It's a book it's a responsive reading on Shabbat. And it's from the scriptures. Well, let me just point it out to you. It is on page 44 and 40. Yeah, page 44. It's a short version of the Shamru prayer. And you see responsive reading on the bottom there? And it's just, some people, I like responsive readings. It's just, I don't know, we just don't do it. Judaism does it a lot, but not the Orthodox. But I don't know if, I don't think too many churches do responsive readings. I don't know.
They do.
But also on high holidays, you have a lot of responsive readings. And in the Machzor book, there are a lot of responsive readings. There's some of them which I sort of created from traditional ones. And I like to take teachings and other people's stuff and rework it into prayers and things that are good for us. So the one thing we didn't, just to go back, there's a Friday evening order service in here on page 1 and 2. You have some things that are just for Friday night from a traditional standpoint. You have Shaftim Mayim Ayed. This is a little song. Israeli scripture, but it's sung to a dance. I mean, Shaftim Mayim Bisosom Mimayim on page 1 and 2 from Isaiah 12:3. And then you have the Matovu again on there, which we mentioned earlier. But on page 3 and 4, you have a song Lechu Nirana, which is a one-liner. But then you have a song called Lechad Dodi, come, my beloved. This actually has a couple lines in it that are very messianic, and the guy must have been a secret believer, or else I don't know how he could have written it, but that's just my opinion. And then on the next page, you have the candlelighting prayer, and you have a song called Shalom Aleichem, which a lot of people debate, should we sing it or shouldn't, because of the angel part in it. And I threw it in at the bottom of page 5 and 6, Shalom Aleichem, peace be unto you. That one. And then you have 7 and 8, things people do, the singing of Eshet Chayil to the wife. You know, it's a woman of valor who can find page 7 and 8, and then the blessing of the children, the Aaronic benediction, and then you have 11 and 12, you have the Baruch Hu and the Shema, a few other prayers that you could vary in if you were involved in things. So, what I'm trying to do here is just show you, because we don't really have the time to go through singing, but I have the CDs in there. If you really want to learn, again, it's not a question of my making sales here. Believe me, if that was what I was here, God would probably strike me down if that was all I was thinking about. Because I can assure you, this is only, this is just, I mean, I have to pay bills too, but I'm not trusting God to get every nickel out of it. It didn't come out exactly right, but I mean, this is what God's told me to do, and I do it. You know, I would rather have a more exciting ministry, because a lot of people think, you know, liturgy, oh, it's boring, you know. It's like an uphill thing, you know what I mean? You know, or people that are into other things. I wish I had that scholarly mind like those other guys. I know what I believe, but I don't remember the arguments after a while.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
This year.
Okay.
It was because last year, when you were here doing the liturgy, I was like, yes, that's what he was doing, liturgy. And that's what turned me back.
Well, praise the Lord. What can I say?
Sure.
It's a very humbling thought. I mean, what you said is really... What can I say? I enjoy doing it, and I really am thankful that Tim, you know, has the vision to let me do it now. And because I think it adds something to what we're doing. And if I didn't, I wouldn't do it. But I think Tim would feel the same way. And I would like to believe as time goes on, more people will see worth in doing it. But it has to be done right. Like I said, you know, if you go on the website and you download these principles, how to make liturgy worshipful, I keep, you know, they actually changed the title of this. They said they added something in it. But usually the whole theme, since I do it only once a year, is there are other subjects I could really throw in here, but I really have to emphasize that, you know, that it's making liturgy worshipful is really what I'm trying to do, put Yeshua in it, and also do it in a way that everybody can participate, following these simple principles in here, in the vision statement, which is on the website. These are, you know, like always having transliteration and translation. That seems so basic, but you go a lot of places, they just say, turn to page 35, we're going to sing Micha Mocha. Micha Mocha, no English, no transliteration. You'd be amazed. I mean, well, maybe more people have transliteration, maybe, but so many people do it without saying the translation. And there are always going to be new people, and even if you're an old person, I still, doing it a long time, you still want to be able to think about what you're saying before you just sing it in Hebrew. Because when you sing it in Hebrew, you're not really thinking about what the words mean, because you don't know what it means usually. Even I, who know Hebrew, but it's not my mother tongue per se, I still don't think about it in Hebrew very often. Once in a while I do, I think the Hebrew words. But usually I'm thinking maybe the meaning of it or something, or I'm just enjoying worshiping, doing it unto the Lord. So at least if you do the English, you know, beforehand, you think about what it is, and then you enjoy singing it, you know, and, you know, it isn't any big deal. But I do think these principles are important, and if you, you know, have a chance to look at them again, you know, and it's like I think they really can contribute, and without them, liturgy can really be boring, like a lot of people think. It's all in how it's done. At least that's what I really feel. You know, liturgy itself is neutral. And because it's in Hebrew, it isn't like worship. Very few people would say worship is boring, because you already have it established that you have a worship leader, and whether you know it or not, he believes that his job is to bring you into a depth of worship with God. And he's going to try to do that in the way he presents it. Well, most people, when they see liturgy, as I said, either they see it from the traditional standpoint, oh, in the Lutheran church we did liturgy, that meant one of these prayers, and you did it always the same ones all the time. I mean, it was just like, and you always sang, you know, praise Him, fine words, I like it, but, you know, it's always the same thing. And, well, there's nothing, well, I guess what I really want to say is not that as much as that we want people to understand to be able to take to have ownership of it, to be able to
intimate relationship.
Yeah, to be able to say, this has meaning for me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, and it's what I explained again about the Michamocha prayer, you know, 3,500 years old, hymn of praise, Moses thing, wow, we're singing it too, you know, it's like you've taken it for yourself. You say, well, I want to do this, you know, or with the Amidah, I said with the Avod portion, you know, God promised He'd bring a Redeemer. Hey, that's great, we know that Redeemer, we're singing the same thing they're singing in the synagogues, you know, and yeah, they don't know it's talking about Yeshua, or like I said in the Vademar and the Elena prayer, that's from Zechariah 14, talking about the day when Yeshua's coming back, and that day the Lord shall be one, and His name one, and it's this great little tune, and you're thinking that thought, wow, this is talking about it, and it goes, Vademar, V'hai Adonai, L'melech al kol haaretz, V'yom ha-hu, V'yom, we're all going like this, V'yom ha-hu, Yeh, Adonai Echad, Ushimo, that's His name, Ushimo Echad, His name is one. So I mean, it is a great tune, and you know, it has great words, and people are thinking, wow, this is a messianic prophecy, and we're singing it, and it's traditional, you know, from all these people singing this stuff, they don't even believe in a Messiah. I mean, really, most Jews don't, really. I mean, they believe in a messianic era. I mean, always some who believe something that somebody will share with you, but very few, really very few. Anyway, that's about it for today. I think we're at the time, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you for coming, and if you